Two Unchangeable Laws. Hello, this is Rako Stefanovic from Walla Walla College School of Theology. Welcome to Probe, our weekly radio program that focuses on biblical topics and discussions. Today we are continuing a series of topics based on one of the most important books of the Bible, the Book of Daniel. To help us explore this book, I have invited two of my colleagues to join me in the discussion, Dr. Dave Thomas, Dean of School of Theology, and Kent Bramlett, a doctoral candidate at the University of Toronto, Canada, who specializes in archaeology and teaches theology on our campus. Welcome to both of you, and thanks for joining.
Thank you.
Daniel chapter 6 contains a story that is widely known. It talks about Daniel in the lion's den. And I happen to teach the book of Daniel on our campus here. Very often in the reading reports that the students submit, they talk about this story as being their favorite from their childhood. So why don't we have a closer look at the chapter here? A number of scholars have pointed to striking parallels that are found in this chapter and in Daniel chapter 3. I have listed some of these in our study guide, and as a reminder to our readers, you can go into our study guide either online if you type in www.wwc.edu/probe, or if you send an email message to probe@wwc.edu, you might find our study guides as useful help in the study of the Book of Daniel. Here we also have a plan or the structure of each chapter as proposed. So, in the introduction to the lesson for today, lesson 7, dealing with Daniel chapter 6, we have some of these similarities between Daniel 6 and 3 listed. I'm going to read 5 that are listed here. First of all, there is the order to worship false gods in both chapters. Then the faithful refuse the order. We remember the three young men in chapter 3, and this time it is Daniel who refuses to comply with the order of the king. Then the faithful are sentenced to death in both chapters. Point number 4 is that the faithful are delivered and the king repents. And finally, the king utters a hymn of praise to God at the end of the chapter. So, to that aged question, where was Daniel when his friends suffered and were persecuted and faced a death threat in chapter 3? We can answer in a simple way and say, well, in chapter 6, Daniel had to face a very similar problem, if we can say,
where were his friends, right?
And this time...
Yeah, where were his friends this time?
That's right. We can ask the same question. Where are his friends when we find him praying to his God? Basically, the chapter begins with a report on Daniel's success. And this is somewhat surprising because we find that the empires, they changed from Babylon. Now we are into Medo-Persia. And yet Daniel is still in power. And the ruler this time is certain Darius the Mede. Now, here we find a little of a historical problem because in secular history we do not find a ruler by the name of Darius the Mede. So any guess, any attempt to who he might have been?
Well, there have been a few attempts. Probably the best one, in my opinion, is to say we just don't know. Because there were Dariuses. I mean, there were several kings of Persia, but they were later.
And there are other things we don't know about ancient times, too, right?
Yeah. And so, sure, one can speculate and say, well, perhaps it's another name for, and then give a possibility. But in the end, we really just don't know.
That's right. Yes.
I think another possibility is it was somebody whose reign was very, very short.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, the idea is from the Babylonian sources that after the Babylonians had conquered Babylon, the general who actually took Babylon in behalf of Cyrus the Great, became the ruler of Babylon for a certain time, even though Cyrus was known as the ruler of the lands or the emperor himself. Another idea that I like very much that finds some support in the text of the Bible is that Cyrus the Great was known by two names because he came from a dual parentage. His father was a Persian, his mother was Median. There is a possibility that the two nations, by the way, that had been at war for many centuries and that he was able to unite, that the two peoples refer to him by two different titles. But again, I agree with you, Kent, the most honest way is to say we do not have a definite answer. So we can only have guesses or educated guesses.
Right.
So, here, the story turns around the topic or the theme of professional jealousy. Daniel is successful. That creates attention. There are people who do not like to see him be their boss and so on. And what do? They prepare a plot, and they are able, if we can use the term, to trick, to deceive the king. They go to the king, and they ask him to put, verse 8 says, in writing, that no one can pray to anyone, any god or human being, except to you, the king.
And here I want to observe that they are playing, they are flattering the king.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are making, they are playing on his sense of importance. And his head got swelled up with pride, and then he wrote this foolish law. Or what turned out to be a foolish law.
So they're doing it on purpose. And how honest are these people? Let me read verse 7, and I will ask you, my colleagues, to react to it. The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors, and governors have all agreed, they say, that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or man during the next 30 days, except to you, O king, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Is this statement true or false, or maybe exaggerated? Notice the word, they have all agreed.
Yeah.
Are they missing anyone?
Yeah, Daniel, at least.
At least Daniel, who was a prominent official in the kingdom at that time. Well, now we come to Daniel's reaction to this law. The law of the Medes and the Persians that cannot be changed according to the chapter here in the book of Esther. But Daniel is faithful to another law. And that's why I like to entitle the story here, Two Unchangeable Laws. So, which is the law that Daniel obeys and that may be in conflict here?
Well, Daniel certainly gives priority to one of the over the other, doesn't he?
That's right. So it's the law of God, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder how this law resonated in the other temples. How did the other priests relate to this? Evidently, we assumed that they were negotiable, at least, with the requirements. It would strike me, though, as controversial that no sacrifices, presumably, with the prayers would be given. But evidently, they were flexible enough that they didn't end up in the situation that Daniel did.
Must have posed a huge problem to many people, even though for people involved in polytheistic practices, things could have been somewhat easier than in the case of Daniel.
And see, this time Daniel gets in a lot of trouble over this, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. And one point that we have not dealt maybe much in the past discussions is Daniel's life of prayer.
Yeah.
We have seen it a little in chapter 2. Here we certainly see more of it. And a few years ago, a doctoral dissertation, a PhD dissertation, was written on the topic of Daniel's prayers. So it seems that there is quite a bit here. We'll find Daniel praying again in chapter 9, chapter 10.
One thing that's notable here is we have a glimpse into the worship practices, one of the few glimpses we have of the worship practices of the Jews in exile. Daniel prayed towards Jerusalem.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
We really don't know much about the synagogue system, which probably was founded during this period, or private worship as well.
And then we have the practice of praying three times a day.
Three times.
Attested also in the Psalms, mm-hmm. in the Book of Psalms.
It's interesting here, you know, I have heard it said many times that Daniel could have gone and prayed in his closet and still prayed. Mm-hmm. But then the Babylonians would have understood this as a betrayal of his belief.
Yes.
Or they would have thought it that way.
The words found at the end of verse 10 are very precious in this sense. They say, just as he had done before.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he was neither arrogant nor compromising too much or maybe timid, shy or afraid, mm-hmm. Just as he had done before.
Yeah, Daniel wasn't looking for conflict in this regard. But when it came to that, to hide his worship mm-hmm. would have been mm-hmm. a failure.
Mm. That's correct. Mm. Well, immediately that is reported to the king. And it's interesting that we have now the third instance in which Daniel is described as one of the exiles from Judah. In verse 12, his opponents do not describe him as a colleague, as one of the three powerful administrators in the kingdom, but the words here remind very much of the way in which Belshazzar addressed the king in the previous chapter. So three times in the book of Daniel, we find that those who were not sympathetic to what God was doing through Daniel in Babylon, they try to belittle Daniel, don't they? Mm-hmm. Are they checking on his immigrant visa, if it has been renewed?
Yeah,
One of the exiles from Judah, probably in contrast to the native people like master race in Babylon, or the Chaldeans, in this case, probably Medo-Persian satraps. So.
It's interesting how Daniel has moved from administration to administration. He must have been very capable and well-respected.
Yeah,
but he was resented now in his quick move, mm-hmm. apparently, mm-hmm. by his new colleagues.
He got ahead of some long-timers.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, elsewhere in the book of Daniel, when we find Daniel praying, the words of his prayer are recorded, but not in this chapter. Mm. However, some scholars have suggested that the words of Darius, "May your God, whom you serve, continually rescue you," that we find the words of the king's prayer recorded here. Mm. In any case, the king is very favorable toward Daniel.
Yes.
Right, and in the morning when he comes to the lions, then he finds that Daniel.
And that's my favorite part of that. When the king has the den opened, what does he say? Can you imagine? Oh, you know, oh Daniel, has the God whom you serve been able to save you? That's how he begins.
Yes.
So I mean, he had some expectation that Daniel's God would deliver him.
And Daniel is polite. Daniel answers to him, "O king, live forever. You know, I was innocent before you and my God."
Yeah.
So another wonderful story of deliverance of Daniel by his God. Well, Daniel's attitude in this story is presented in a stark contrast to that of his enemies. We find him addressing the king in the most polite way. I would like to thank both of you, Dave and Kent, for your contributions. Next week, you will be again my guests. And to all our readers, please join us next week as we continue to explore the messages from the biblical book of Daniel. Also, remember that you can check the study guide on our website, or you can order one from the School of Theology. Thank you for tuning in. For Probe, I'm Zdravko Stefanovic.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you may call 509-527-2194 or email probe@wwc.edu. Join us again next week at this same time for Probe.